Psalm 78. He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers to teach to their children, that the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn, and they may arise and tell them to their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and that they should not be like their fathers, stubborn and a rebellious generation, a generation whose heart was not steadfast and whose spirit was not faithful to God. Welcome to Truth and Nails. My name is Pastor Sean Brando. So glad you could join me for today's episode. I trust that you'll be encouraged by it. Let's jump right in. Well, we are very happy to have Dr. Dave Curry coming back at us again. We had part one regarding marriages, and Dr. Dave comes to us as president of Doing Family Right. Dave, thank you for being here again.
Yeah, it's so good to be in. I like the part you said, I'm coming at him. That's right. I'm coming at you. That's right.
Perfect.
Really good.
I wanted to start off. We're going to be doing a segment here on parenting, and I titled it COVID Kids. And so it's about what kind of effects is COVID having on our children, and not just in the middle of it, but as we move out of it, what are some things we need to be aware of? So in regards to parenting, I wanted to start with a little bit of a parenting story about Brock, your son. We had a lemonade stand when we were about seven, me and Brock. And I want you to know, Brock went home with all the money. My mom reminded me of that today. And so I thought I'd bring that up. Maybe we could deal with that later. And if you could talk to Brock.
We might as well get that settled now.
Well, there's massive inflation since then too. So I'm not even sure what the number would be anymore.
Not in BC. Everything's going downhill here.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect. Hey, I know when we talked about marriage, it was just a great conversation. We stayed biblical, and we want to do the same thing for today. But I want to ask your opinion, first of all. What are some of the things, some of the effects that you're seeing on our children through this COVID nightmare, this pandemic during this time?
Yeah. Some of the things we're seeing, Sean, is that whatever malady a kid has, whatever struggle they might have, just seems to be exaggerated, seems to be more exacerbated. It just kind of ramps up. So if kid had an anxiety situation somewhat, that's growing. If the kid has some struggles with depression, that's growing. If a kid had some insecurities, he's not getting more confident this time. He's actually becoming more inward and pulling away, because that's what the culture is kind of creating, this more isolation. If a kid had some struggle with fears, well, this is going to create more fears, right? Obviously, if the kid's having struggles even with school and academics, no offense to most parents, but most parents aren't as gifted as teachers who are trained to do this.
Yeah.
And so, the kid is, likely struggling. My daughter just lives in Washington State, just below BC here, and she was saying that the academics, the leaders of the state of Washington are saying that the average kid, it will take him 5 years to get caught up academically what happened, because he's being homeschooled by parents who are not really trained to do this.
Wow.
And we're not dissing anybody who homeschools. We're not saying that, because they would have a little more input and better programs or whatever. But the average parent who now has to just homeschool, here's some curriculum, you got to try to make it happen, it'll take 5 years for the average kid to get back to where they needed to be.
Wow.
Pre-COVID. So there's some of the things that we're seeing.
My wife saw a plaque in the store, and she was going to buy it, and it said "World's Okayest Homeschooling Mom," and I thought that was a pretty good indication of how most parents probably felt during this, if not maybe on the other end of it, that I'm doing a terrible job. That's the way I felt. Aside from just the training of our children, just education wise, what do you think isolation does? And why does it exacerbate those problems like depression or anxiety and so on? What is it about isolation that does that?
So what happens is, first of all, the human soul was meant to socialize. Mm-hmm. One of God's first statements about humanity was, it's not good for a man to be alone. And he wasn't just thinking of husband and wife. It was a statement about how, because we were created in God's image, and God's image is a community of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. We're created for connection. And because the heart is created for connection, what happens is when we isolate a child, we pull them away from just the normal connection socialization, which, you know, 80% of the kids or better really thrive in. Some of the kids have to learn and you know, they're a little more insecure and you know, have some challenges that allow them, you know, more hurdles to connect. But as a general rule, connection is the heart of the soul. Mm-hmm. Connection is a primary need. That we are socialized, we are cared for, we are friended, we are connected, and in that journey we become healthy. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't mean you can't be connected to mom and dad. I mean, and of course when they're young, that's where it starts, the socialization process. There's a deep trust and bond between mom and dad. That's where it starts. But then we learn to transfer that to other people, and when that is taken away, first of all, we don't have the distraction from our own troubles by just being with someone and laughing and playing, you know, basketball or playing some kind of schoolyard game or whatever. We don't have that distraction. We don't have the joy of others. We don't have the laughter. We don't have the connection. So in that journey, now I kind of sit there and I have much more time for me to ruminate about my worries and fears and stresses and aloneness. And some people feel that aloneness very much more than others. And sadly, there's a transition that starts happening around 9, 10, 11, 12, in there someplace, depending on the maturity of the child, where the primary connection point isn't mom and dad, much to their sorrow, but actually other people. Significant others. It could be, oh my, you know, at 11, my hockey coach is the coolest thing in the world, you know. You know, my teacher, I just really love it. You know, the sun sets at Mrs. Jones's feet, you know, because, well, Mrs. Jones said, and the parents are about ready to strangle Mrs. Jones because the kid's quoting Mrs. Jones all the time. Well, see, these outside relationships are part of life, part of maturity, part of the developmental tasks of people that become essential. And when I don't have those outside voices of perspective and encouragement, it all is on the parent, who can frankly only stomach so much of their own kids, being honest. You know, now those parents who could, oh, I could be with my kids 24/7. First of all, it's been a short time then. Or secondly, they're lying. Okay. Because at some point it's healthy to have a bit of a distance, a bit of a break. And the parent who has to be all the time with their kid is actually a dangerous parent, because they are ones that hover. They do not give their children freedom to grow up. They're always protecting. And we love this expression. It's an old saying, but it says this, prepare the child for the path, not the path for the child. And the parent that hovers is always, oh, cleaning up, make sure, careful, honey, careful. And they're always walking ahead to make sure that this kid doesn't get a few bumps in life, which of course we learn from. Mm-hmm. But we prepare the child to overcome things. You can step over that, honey, be careful, good job, as opposed to, let me move that, oh, careful. And we make this pristine little pathway that is not healthy. Mm-hmm. We got to prepare the child for the path. And that's how we have to help them with COVID, and not, we can't take COVID out of the path. Mm-hmm. We can't prepare the path for the child and keep them away somehow from, you know, the complications of this. So, mm-hmm. so there's some thoughts there, Sean, along that line.
So compare that statement or that phrase with the proverb, train up a child in the way that they should go, and when they're old, they won't depart from it. Is that a similar thing? Is that what's being said in the proverb?
Like, yeah, you see, when you train up a child in the way they should go, you're saying, I will train you how to walk on this path by walking behind me, and I'll clear the way for you so you have no stress in life.
Right.
I wrote an article, Sean, on bubble wrapped kids and how parents do the kids a disservice by so protecting them with bubble wrap emotionally and psychologically and mentally, that they actually do not know how to face trials in this world because of an overprotective, hovering parent. And it's actually wise. Now, you know, remember, kids learn about stresses in life from mom and dad. They learn how to cope. And so when grandpa passes away, it is not a wise parent who says, no, mommy, they're only seven. They're not going to come to the funeral. No, that's not good.
Yeah.
Now, do they have to, you know, hang around the open casket and feel weird? No, no, they don't. They can remember grandpa as they remember him. And we don't want to horrify them by, you know, a not so perfect, you know, embalming or whatever. But we do them a disservice not to let them see. Like when they see mom and dad cry, it's okay to cry when you lose somebody.
Right.
When they see mom and dad talking about how important grandpa was, all of a sudden, well, I have a story too about how I love grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, when we protect people, we're not training up a child in the way he should go. We are actually preventing them from learning how to go through hard things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say preparing the child for the path is in pretty much synergy with training up a child in the way he should go.
Yeah.
And then you stand back and you let the kid go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, parents say, well, oh, I'm not going to let my kid go. You're right. There's a lot of really goofy parents who never let their kid go at 16, 18, 20, and they're still controlling their finances at 24. And, you know, well, I don't think that's a good idea. So I'm not going to sign off on that check for you. And they're 24. That's real story, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. these parents feel, well, they know better, but the kid never grows. He never learns. And so there you create a dependency that is unhealthy. You actually end up disabling a kid, not enabling. Now we know that enabling is not a good thing, which means I'm always there cuddling and holding and, you know, but it's one worse than enabling in that sense when we disable them by not letting them make age appropriate decisions and grow through the experiences of life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I think you brought, I mean, the last phrase that you said, the age appropriate decisions, I think you have to temper it, right? With, there still is a role that the parent plays in protecting a child, but there's also this idea of preparing and then mopping up messes and helping, you know, reconcile and doing different things as our kids make mistakes. But how does a parent balance that? You know, how does a parent that has that tendency to hover or overprotect, how do we move out of that? How does a parent move out of that? Is there just don't do it isn't good enough.
So there's a part one and part two of this answer. So stay with me, Sean. Okay. Part one is there's a mental picture parents need to have. When a child comes into the home, okay, at birth, mom and dad are required to take that child by the hand and teach them how to do life. So they really are, literally, you see, I'm holding the kid's hand in my mind. I mean, you and I have the video thing, the viewers don't, or the listeners don't. But you know, in one hand, so my right hand, I'm holding my child's hand. But the brilliant, God-honoring parent, I'm using my left hand, they reach up and they got Jesus' hand. See, mm-hmm. So mom and dad are really connected to Jesus. So they have God's wisdom, God's spirit working in them, God's perspective on their life. In their left hand, they're holding on to Jesus. On their right hand, they're, you know, got the little one by the hand, they're holding hands. And so there's this, mom and dad are the connection of this child to God because of their relationship with the child and their equal relationship to God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens, Sean, and this is the visual that listeners can have over time, the hand that's stretched up in the air towards God, where I'm taking God's hand, and the hand reaching out to my child, which is down in the lower right, I start bringing those together. And sometime between 16, 18, 20, I put the child's hand in God's hand and I let go and stand back.
Mm.
You see, parents, I'm never going to let go of my child's hand. Not wise. Not wise. You want them to be connected to Jesus. And so you've done your best job as a parent when you slowly over time bring the hand of the Lord and the hand of the child together, and they actually come to know and love Jesus and have their own direct line to Jesus without you as the intermediary.
Right. Yeah.
And so there's the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The small picture is age-appropriate decisions is I need to give kid practice in making decisions, and I'm going to use the word on things that don't matter, while they're with me. Right. For instance, they could be already only age three. And it's cold in Saskatchewan and it's snowy out. And you're going to let them decide if they want to wear mittens or gloves. Because as long as they have something, because you don't want them to get frostbite and, you know, to be unhappy because their hands are too cold and they're whatever. But they, it's not a choice as to whether they wear something on their hands. But you're going to let them decide, well, do you want to wear your mittens or gloves? Well, the three-year-old thinks, oh, those are cool with all those little long things on the end. I'll wear those. Yeah. Only realize that the three-year-old, it's a real pain to get all your fingers in the different holes. So after a while, they go with the mitts because it's a lot easier. Okay. So what happens in the process, I let them make age-appropriate decisions that are not consequential. Now, there may be a 6 or 7 year old says, I don't want to wear my gloves. So you say, okay. Now, the three-year-old, you don't give that decision to.
Right.
Basically, it's kid, shut up and put on your mitts or gloves, whatever you want. And but the older kid who's saying, I don't want to, you know, put on my gloves or whatever. Okay. So you just kind of tuck them in your pocket, right? You tuck them in your pocket so that it's full on over. If you can go ahead and, you know, totally not wear your gloves, but mom and dad are wise. They got them in their back pocket because as the kid starts crying because their hands are cold, you say, oh, wow, where's your gloves? I didn't bring them. Okay, well, you realize how important it is to wear your gloves when it's cold like this. Yes, our hands are so cold, Mommy. Okay, well, you know what? Mommy's got your gloves here. Here you go. Oh, thank you, Mommy. Okay, so the lesson's learned. Now, did they die for those 8 minutes that their hands were cold? No, yeah. But they learned a lesson. And we're not saying you can go to school today without your coat on. No, that's a little too much because we can't supervise the end of that one. So age-appropriate decisions. And so, even as they get older, I'll tell you one more fun story. My daughter in grade 9 decided that she wanted to take an auto mechanics course. Now, listen, I'm not trying to be sexist or anything that women should or shouldn't be a mechanic. That's not the point. The point is my daughter was likely not going to end up being a mechanic in her life. And she thought it was really cool to maybe be in this class was all grade 11 and 12 boys. that was the truth.
Yeah.
That was the truth. She really didn't want to learn to take a motor apart. And then, you know, but she took the class as an elective and I decided, it's not going to hurt her. She's going to still get into college if she, you know, doesn't take, you know, trigonometry or something.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, she's a solid, you know, straight A student. And, you know, I likely suspected the reasons. Well, she and her girlfriend were the only two grade 9 girls in a grade 11 and 12 auto course, right? And it was only fun for about the first 2 weeks, right? But yeah. it wasn't a lesson that hurt her to learn. Mm-hmm. You know, that, you know, being a novelty in the class gets really old when, you know, can I use the word in her mind? She would use these creepy guys, Dad, they're this and they're that and they're this and they're that. Oh, okay. Well, you know, I'll have to get through this class then. And, you know, and then, but you see, she learned a lesson and it really didn't hurt her academics to have made that choice on her own. And she learned some valuable lessons. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, you know, it's good for us to let the kids make some choices and learn while they're with us so that they're practicing life while they're still around. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You know, your imagery is that's striking. You know, where the parent has the hand to the Savior and then a hand to the child. And it's, you know, for a parent, I think there's a must that our faith in Christ is growing. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we will be far less likely to want to turn them over to that Savior. Yeah. And so I think it's incumbent on us as parents to have our faith flourishing and growing and not to be hurting or we're going to prolong that. We're going to try to control things. We're going to try to be the child savior. And then I guess on the other hand too, we'll have to come to terms with, can we trust our child, you know? And if we haven't equipped them, it gets harder and harder to trust them too. So it becomes a catch-22, you know, when you, if we don't put effort in starting at a young age, the bigger decisions at older ages become more challenging too. And so not impossible, but it presents challenges for sure.
Yeah, I want to just piggyback off that because you have a really good point there. The importance of a parent's faith being alive and vibrant cannot be underestimated. Mm-hmm. The importance of that. Because you say, well, if you don't have a strong, vibrant faith, you say, well, you might not want to help your kids with the faith. Well, but the truth is, a lot of parents are wanting to help kids with their faith because they want that for their kids. But their own faith is a 3 out of 10 at best.
Right.
So you can't help kids get to a place that you've never been. Mm-hmm. And so then what happens is, you know, like I remember as, you know, 20 some years working as a youth pastor, I remember telling kids, hey, listen, it's important that you read your Bible every day. And they look at me and go, what? Yeah. Like the scripture is clear. We're supposed to meditate day and night, read in the word and learn about the Lord. And you know, well, my dad never reads his Bible. Mm-hmm. And you know, Sean, one of the hardest things for me to do as a youth worker was to get the level of faith of the teenager past the level of faith that they saw in mom and dad.
Amen. Yeah.
And so it's the danger is that parents want this for their kids, but they don't want it enough for themselves, because 100%, Sean, way more is caught than taught. Mm-hmm. You can have all the wonderful things to say, but if your life isn't ringing true, if it isn't legitimate and authentic, your faith isn't alive and vibrant, kids know that.
Yeah.
They know that. You can't just, okay, well, now let's have our devotional time, kids.
Right.
And they go, yeah, but you and mom were just fighting in the other room and I heard a couple of swear words.
Yeah.
Well, you weren't supposed to be listening to that, son, you know, as if it's adult talk. No, it's adult dysfunction. And the kid is saying, well, if Jesus makes a difference, why should you say, my brother and I shouldn't be fighting, but you and mom are fighting. Hmm. What's the difference? Mm-hmm. And so what happens, all the things that we say to our kids are either validated or invalidated by the reality of our experience with Jesus. Hmm. Now, parents say, oh, my goodness, then I got to be perfect. Yeah. I said, no, it's not about perfection, Sean, it's about the direction of your life. Kids can be forgiving with your imperfections, but they cannot steer any place away from the direction of your life. The direction is clear. Mm. Your imperfections, fine. So parents, don't worry about being perfect, but the direction of your life has to be clear, and kids will see that.
So do you think that's one of the problems with COVID, is that it's created a much more intense greenhouse within the home? Like, dad is home more often, which adds strain into the marriage. The kids are seeing, is our family situation actually adding strain in the COVID with our kids, because they're seeing us, and maybe we're just part of who we really are is coming out more, and it's more visible to our kids.
And I mean, if who we really are is coming out more, that could be really good too. Because if you're a really solid, godly, other-centered, caring person, let her come. Mm-hmm. But the average person is a little bit selfish. Like Sean, the truth is, for our listeners who don't know me, if you cut me open, the characteristics that bleed out of Dave Curry automatically are critical, judgmental, and impatient. Mm-hmm. Critical, judgmental, and impatient. Okay, so that's kind of, I can automatically go there in a heartbeat. So when scripture says, you know, love is patient, that's not me. Love is kind, that's not me. I'm a mess. Without Jesus, I'm a mess.
Right.
And everybody has their own story. They don't like to admit it. But I've come to terms with the fact that without Jesus, I'm a mess. And I need to deal with my impatience, my judgmental side, my critical edge. To be a God-honoring father and a God-honoring husband and a God-honoring man, Jesus needs to work on my dysfunction. Mm-hmm. And every person listening as a parent has liabilities, character liabilities that they need to look in the mirror, accept that they're there, and address. And if you're wondering, well, I'm not sure what they are, maybe just listen to your spouse the last 20 conversations, yeah. And you'll likely be able to summarize, yeah, that you maybe are judgmental, critical, and impatient. Mm-hmm. And that might be something to work on. Mm-hmm. And so what I like to say to parents, if you want your kids to bleed, you have to hemorrhage. Hmm. You see, if you want them to be in a certain direction, you have to be all in bonsai in that direction for them to move in that direction.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And so COVID exposes our humanness. Yeah, because we're together more. We don't have breaks from each other. We don't have the usual, you know, recreational things. We don't have the usual, you know, outdoor activities or sporting things or entertainment things. We don't have the usual getting out to grab a meal away and mom isn't always having to cook. And, you know, you, like you said, dad working from home, mom at home, and kids maybe might be at home all the time too, depending on what stage of lockdown the province is in. Like it's a mess, but it is complicated, and it is causing more families to unravel than I would have thought. Like our counseling center out here in BC, we're jammed. I could use three or four more counselors right now and likely have them filled in 3 weeks because the hurts are surfacing. The frustrations are spilling over. The agitation is getting verbal and people are struggling with this.
So how then, maybe let's think positively here for a second. How have you seen some families react positively to this and maybe to be proactive and to curb some of the things that they're seeing, maybe to even protect their family from what they know is inevitable if they spend too much time together? What are some things that families are doing to just practically maybe, or is it, maybe there's some families that you've seen that have just been really intentional about just living out the gospel in this time, in a unique opportunity, maybe viewing it as an opportunity rather than as a, you know, a detriment to family. Are there some success stories that you have?
Excellent. I will go there. And of course, you know, living out the gospel is primarily within your own family. Because we can't really bring the neighbor's family along with us technically, right? And so respecting the protocols there, although now in BC you can have a group of 10 people together in a park, right? So you can actually get together with another family as long as your total isn't 10 in where I'm at right now here in our province. So there could be a little bit of that. But as a general rule, you're actually trying to live out the gospel within your own family. And so some of the creative things that are happening, first of all, there has to be a commitment by mom and dad to, well, we can't just do the same old. Because the same old used to be the kid going to school for, you know, 5-6 hours a day. And then they were in hockey practice here and youth group there and, you know, piano lesson here. And most of those are gone.
Right. Yeah.
And so we can't do same old. We actually have to do something new and creative, innovative, certainly intentional. And one of the things that you don't have to be shut in. You don't have to. You can go out. Yeah. You can go out. And there are so many advantages to people being outside. Mm-hmm. Not only just getting more sun, that is healthy in itself. Getting fresh air, that is healthy in itself. Getting a change of scenery is healthy in itself. Doing something different, even if it's walking near a creek and throwing rocks, you know, into the water, you know, throwing a log in and watching it float down, making a boat, you know, and playing little boat races. I mean, it could be a whole host of other things, but the parents expecting that they used to be able to let the kids play, do their Lego, this and that. And yeah, you can do that. But the problem is when they're 24/7 locked inside, it's really critical that we make some intentional steps to do something outside as a family, for health reasons, for just a change of pace reasons, for exercise reasons, for novelty reasons, for you know, not having cabin fever reasons.
Yeah.
Just you know, just that in itself is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And so you know, I've had, you know, parents take up new hobbies just so that they can get out with their kids.
And
good for those parents who have said, okay, in COVID, we can't do same old because we're all going to die. Mm-hmm. we have to find, you know, some variation to our current challenges. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, no, I think that's really good. And it's really practical too, just things that we can be doing. I think you're right about the intentional part with the parents. It's going to take an effort, and maybe that's where parents are just tired, but it's an effort that will reap rewards for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, do you see a lot of this just getting reset? Once things open up again, we'll just go back to same old, same old? Or do you think there's going to be some lasting things here, good things that have crept into the family? Maybe this intentional thing, mom and dad are planning activities for the family, they're spending more time together. Maybe families have been craving that, but because of activity, it's been hard to do. Now that the activity is gone, it's revealed this opportunity to be together. Do you think most parents are going to go back to just the same old, or do you think there's a desire for parents to actually reserve more time as a family?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I hope that some of the intentional good things that they added to their family's life that they keep.
Yeah.
You know, the picture that I had when we were talking was, let's just say, you know, the mom and dad have a 10 and a 12-year-old, boy and a girl, choose whatever you want. And in the process, they got a couple of pellet guns and they would take a bunch of cans and they'd go out for an hour and, you know, they just, you know, play some kind of games where they had to shoot the cans.
Yeah.
There could be a kid post-COVID who says, Dad, could we ever go shoot cans again?
Yeah.
Well, hello, we created something that allowed for connection between parent and child. It was a fun activity, knocking the cans off the fence post or whatever, right? Yeah, yeah. And, you know, keeping score and, you know, going to Tim Hortons for a treat afterwards because we did so good in our shooting today or whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of things that are, I hope, are intentionally kept. The problem is, I think a lot of parents will be so relieved when things get back to order. That they're going to just kind of throw their hands up and go, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God for teachers. Thank God for hockey coaches. Thank God for youth groups. And just kind of, I need a break from these kids. Okay. So that's good for a bit, but I really do. And there may be even growing appreciation for all the things that these significant others bring into our kids' lives. So maybe a greater point of gratitude. But accept that there will be a bit of a recoil, a break needed, but then to say, okay, well, what do we have to keep going? What do we have to keep doing? What do we learn? There's a lot of families who found that, you know what, COVID has allowed us to have a lot of fun together as a family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now that's not as common as I'd like to hear, but I have heard it where they've played more board games together and the kids have accepted, well, this is better than, you know, sitting on our butt the whole time and just, you know, fighting or whatever. And so they had, you know, little this and that and tried this and tried that. And it became, a new little, hey, Friday night, we're going to have pizza and a board game moving forward. You used to do the board games, you know, three nights a week for an hour before the kids went to bed. And now we'll just once a week do it. But we took something out of COVID that connected us more.
Yeah.
And so within the family, there could be stronger structures because of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's, I think that's really good. I think what one of the things that we've seen for sure in our kids is just a tendency to just more screen time during this. And it scares me a little bit because we see a dependence on that, not just in our home, but in our whole society. And even myself personally, as a parent, I find myself on my phone a lot more during this time. Just talk about that. I don't want to lead your thoughts on that too much, but is this a problem? Is it something we got to curb?
Well, first of all, screen time is a bigger problem than COVID.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, we have a whole 2-hour seminar we teach on, preparing your kids for online battle, technological warfare, right? And so we use the word FaceTime as opposed, and not in the sense of like the iPhone, which is FaceTime, but FaceTime is real people. So I'll use that explanation. We need to balance FaceTime with screen time. And that too much focus on the screen time. My son works in a public high school. And he has a leadership class, about 60 kids in the two classes. And these are all more the top students and just really the leaders, good kids. And they found out that the average kid's daily screen time by just writing down, actually, they, you know how the phone has a recording that how much screen time you're having?
Yep.
He wrote down, he asked every kid, what does it say in that number there? What does it say? And the average kid was 6.5 hours of screen time a day in grade 11 and 12 of this high school.
Wow.
6.5 hours. Right up to 8.5, but the average was 6.5. So the low number was like about 5 hours a day of screen time. Well, you understand that now the devices are shaping the culture.
Yeah.
In every way. So we have to be careful with, you know, especially as the kids are younger, that we, you know, often, oh, we'll just let them watch this. I need a break. Okay, well, that's true. You put on some, you know, video to keep the kids happy for a bit. But be careful on letting the digital devices become the babysitters too often, because you are creating the addiction. They're getting used to it. And you even see, you know, 3-year-old kids that are in the mall or in a grocery store howling and whining because they want mom's phone to keep playing the game they played on the drive to the grocery store.
Yeah.
And mom needs to use her phone because she's got a grocery list on it. And so now the kid is having a hissy fit because, you know, mom wants to look at her list, but the kid feels, mom, that is my toy. Give me my phone back. Well, it isn't his phone, but he's 2.5 and that's what he wants.
Yeah.
And we have created a real complexity. And the danger is unsupervised hours of kids on devices and parents who do not have protection software in their home and on the devices, you are a tire fire waiting to happen. You are, I just recently spoke at a really solid Christian school around here to all the grade 8 boys, my daughter at the same time, she's a speaker as well. She spoke to all the grade 8 girls. And I talked about developing a sexual worldview. And then we talked for 40 minutes about the problem of pornography and the fact that the average little boy running into pornography is 9.5.
Wow.
And I'm talking to 12 and 13 year old boys who many of which may be looking at porn already for a year or two.
Yeah.
Of course, their parents don't know. But the parents, the school asked if I would come and address this because this particular grade 8 class was struggling with some relational issues, you know, respective girls and wrong talk. This is a Christian school with all Christian parents, you know, like this is happening more and more because unsupervised screen time and unprotected screen time as far as no software, no filters to protect them from getting to crazy things. And so we have got an ongoing building snowball going down the hill that's getting bigger and bigger on this one that we really need to wisely address.
Yeah. Can you give us for the maybe the technologically that aren't as advanced, give us some of those ideas that you would use or some helps for those parents that are looking for ways to guard screen time, what's going on, filters, those types of things. Do you have any just offhand, or can they go to your website and find that? Or?
The website has a lot of information, doingfamilyright.com. You can just type in technology and it'll pop up, or parenting kids through screen time, it'll pop up. We got podcasts just on that, you know. And so we do, you know, have a talk we do on technological warfare. So even contracts with the kids with their cell phones, and we have a contract that they could, you know, have the kids sign before they can get their own phone and stuff. You know, there's lots of helps available, Sean. And of course, you know, you opened a Pandora's box for me because that is likely the number one requested seminar they asked me to come and do. So maybe we should do a podcast down the road and just
good
just
idea.
For parents on how to help your kids through this whole technological warfare and what do wise parents do.
Right.
There's lots of helps on there. And it's, you know, basically there's two different things parents need to be aware of. One is filtering, which they have some kind of software program that will protect their kid from getting to something inappropriate, and also reporting where they can see where their kid is going, or they gets a report. Did you know that your kid tried to get here? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so those are the two things, reporting and also monitoring or accountability software would be the two broad stroke things, at least to get parents started. Okay.
Yeah, not all bad, even for parents, not just for with their children, but it's also for where we are, even accountability within the couple and within the home. So yeah, great idea. Maybe we will touch on that in the future.
Yeah, even this computer that we're interacting on here, because we're recording with me in Abbotsford through my computer. This computer here has a software program on it that even if my computer is sitting open at home and the grandkids are there, no grandkids going to get to anything inappropriate on grandpa's computer.
Yeah.
I will not be the source of one of my grandkids falling because they were playing here and they typed in some inappropriate words and it went there.
Yeah.
Well, it can't go there in this computer. So I have, because of what I teach, I have the protection software on the very computer that's in my office that only Dr. Dave uses. But because it's at home and we could have grandkids overnight for a day or two, they could all of a sudden inappropriately, because they don't play on my computer, but they could go in there, be curious and be playing and maybe inadvertently try to get to something inappropriate.
Yeah.
Well, I've got software on this computer protecting my own grandkids.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great idea. I want to give you a phrase, and then I want to take it a step further. It's a phrase I hear a lot, and it's begun to rub me the wrong way. I want to hear your opinion on it. It's the phrase, well, kids adapt really quickly, so kids are okay with this whole COVID thing, wearing a mask and all those different things. Kids just adapt quickly, and so should we. We should learn to do the same thing. Now, I say that, it bothers me. I want your opinion on that. Have our kids adapted, or are there some warning signs that we got to be looking for that things are just not right in the world of children in the next, whether we're in COVID or coming out of COVID? Are there some warning signs that parents need to be on our guard for that perhaps they're not as adapted as we might think?
Well, Sean, one of the things that comes to my mind is the read that the kids have from their parents based on what parents have said about COVID, about, the bacteria, about the pandemic, about COVID itself. My concern is that parents will inadvertently be creating a crippling fear in the life of a kid.
Yeah.
One of my granddaughters, who's 13 or so, one of the granddaughter's friends, because of the heightened fear that mom and dad have brought into the home, and actually, I would say, gone overboard on protection and strict boundaries and just heightened scrutiny on everything.
Yeah.
That this 13-year-old girl has only been out of her house twice in the last year. Okay, now I want you to know something. Not only is that not healthy for that little girl, but that little girl is going to live with a fear and a phobia long after COVID.
Yeah.
As opposed to, hey, you know what? This is a season. We'll get through this and we'll all be fine. It'll all be fine. But if you got to, oh, no, keep your mask up. Oh, careful. Don't touch that. And if you're doing that one all the time, then this kid is picking up with the parents' fears.
Right.
Because an anxious mom creates anxious kids.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And so, can kids roll with the general flow of the mask and you got to be careful, this and that. Yeah. And now you can hear even my attitude that yeah. There's maybe a little bit overness. I respect people. I got a spray bottle right behind my office. I spray between clients and do all the stuff. And I don't shake hands with people. And we sit 6 feet apart when they come in for sessions and all that stuff. But we're respecting the journey, but we got to be careful not to create an unnecessary phobia and fear in the lives of our kids, especially with those kids who already have a timid disposition.
Right.
Yeah. We are going to make them hypochondriacs. We're going to make them worried about everything. And it translates to so much in life if we're not careful, as opposed to, like, I love this saying, this line, and maybe parents should say something like this more often. Just so you know, honey, COVID's not in charge. Jesus is. Mm-hmm. We're gonna be okay.
Yeah.
We're gonna be okay. Yeah, we gotta keep our masks up here. We gotta protect others. We gotta be careful, but we're gonna be okay. Jesus is still in charge.
Yeah.
And so we as a family, we're gonna pray. We're gonna trust God. We're gonna follow the protocols. You know, hey, don't forget your mask. That's one thing to say, don't forget your mask. Is go, what are you doing? Oh my goodness, you could catch COVID if your mask isn't on. Oh, you, what are you thinking? Yeah. I told you that. Like, when you do that one, you have just jacked up the anxiety of that child. And if that child is already a timid child with insecurities by nature, there's going to be something long-lasting COVID in the lives of some of these kids.
Yeah.
Parents, please be careful how you roll this out.
Yeah, I think on top of that, I think we've seen it in our church, just inadvertently, you know, kids not knowing how to even relate to each other. Am I allowed to hug this friend that I haven't seen? You know, even 5-6-year-old kids, two kids get together, am I allowed to... Are we allowed to wrestle? Are we allowed to chase each other and play tag? You know, things that were so natural and normal. I think relationally, just and that relational interaction, we're going to have to really watch that. We might have to rebuild some of that. There seems to be a distrust of each other, even that has happened inadvertently. You know, that we can display that other people are a danger to me is a danger to relationships, like when there's constant fear instead of just a freedom, especially within safe bounds with people we know and so on. So,
yeah. But, so I think you're right, Sean. I think to reestablish relational freedom and the high need for social connection is going to need to be primary in our minds, because even in grocery stores, I know we got our masks on and we're, you know, picking up groceries, but I mean, you tend not to say hi to anybody.
Right.
You tend,
yes.
Like I have a good friend who's just nine years over from Ethiopia. And I said, well, how do you find Canada? It's so friendly. I said, how is that? And he says, well, I was, and he named the city. I was there. And he says, I'm just walking like in a park and people are saying, hello, how are you? Hello, how are you? He says, in Ethiopia, we don't do that. You know? And so I'm thinking, we've lost that.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I'm out running. I'm saying hi to people who I run. I'm walking with my wife and, hey, good afternoon. Nice day. Hey, you know, we're doing these kind of things as part of who we are. But like now the grocery store is, other than the two lines I say to the person at the till, something about, you know, cash or, you know, MasterCard, whatever. Right. You know what I mean? Like other than, it, bags or not, you know, like,
yes,
you know, I mean, like there may be less than 30 seconds of communication in a 15-minute shopping thing.
Yeah.
Where it used to be, you know, you'd see someone, you know, you'd stop and talk, and now you just kind of nod. You might lean in and, hey, how's it going? And whatever, but you don't talk because you don't want to be leaning together too much. So someone else is judging you for kind of talking to someone in there. And so, you know, we don't want to be bad people. And you know, and so it's messing up the normal flow of relationships in life, in church, in schools, in grocery stores, and just on the street, on the trails. And we're going to have to work. You know, like I've already started to create some lines, so I may write about this, Sean. COVID's over. COVID's over. Say hi.
Yeah. Yeah. Good, like, good reminder. Just, something so simple, hey? It's just, yeah.
COVID's over. Say hi.
Yeah.
And then the article is about the fact that we've lost our ability to connect socially and we've become isolated even though we're a community. Right?
I don't want to belabor this at all, but are there, I just think for parents, you brought up things like anxiety and relational strain, those types of things, but things like depression are often unseen and unnoticed by parents. And maybe, could you just give us a few warning signs that our kids might be struggling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the parent would have to be pretty disengaged to not see a child's growing depression. Mm-hmm. Now, they've always maybe been a little melancholy, but the depression goes where you see, you know, even in the morning moments, you see a resident sadness. Mm-hmm. You see a disinterest in the normal activities. You see a growing restlessness where they can't settle into activities they used to enjoy. You see them maybe not eating as much and just disinterest in even the snacks that they used to like. You see them having sleep problems and they're coming to you as a 10-year-old in the night. I can't sleep, mommy, you know, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Those are like five or six of the characteristics. Mm-hmm. And then if you start hearing them, you know, into things like, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't think those people like me anymore, meaning, you know, some kind of online community. And so they're starting to evaluate themselves as a disconnect and not being loved, or, you know, that, you know, their life is worthless now, they don't do anything anymore. When they start talking despair, like actually citing things, and you add to that to the resident sadness, you know, the eating disturbance, the sleeping disturbance, you know, their inability to enjoy normal activities that used to be their favorite thing, you got some issues.
Yeah. The best thing to do is to talk to your kid and then put them in touch with a counselor right away, or what's your process from there?
Well, first of all, this is not always easy, because depending on the age of the kid, they might not want to open up to mom and dad. But parents need to be the first line of defense for sure before you go to a counselor. And so, you know, talking about, hey, you know, what's going on that you don't want to eat this, you know, talk about, hey, you know, why don't you get online and talk to your friend? Like, why are you pulling away? You know, the activities they used to, you know, really like, playing some game with the family, and now they just don't want to play. And it's not because they're doing something else. They just pulling away, right? They're spending more time alone. And so it's pulling them out by, you know, getting them to do things with you, getting some good fresh air. So, hey, listen, let's go for a bike ride together.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to. Well, I'll tell you what, let's go for a bike ride. We'll swing by Tim Hortons and I'll get you an ice cap or whatever, right? And you know, yeah, you might have to bribe them a little bit, but inactivity and enhanced isolation, or extended isolation, or despondency, yes, with no break. The break's going to help, even if you had to kind of bribe them to get moving.
Good.
And
yeah,
parents, if after your valued attempts to re-engage the kid with life and activities doesn't happen, then you would lean towards maybe getting a counselor involved. And to be honest, if the kid is, you know, 12 and under, you may want to go as a husband and wife and ask the counselor what you think we could do to help our kid.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes sending a kid, you know, there, it's as much the system that the kid's in, mm-hmm, than it's the kid needing help.
Mm-hmm.
And
good
so,
point.
Sorry, parents, for saying that, but the truth is, you know, if the kid is younger, all my counselors that work with kids will, you know, will say, well, listen, I do need to have a little time with mom and dad here, because they got to know some things.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just some magical talk they have with the counselor twice and they're going to be fixed.
Yeah.
There's a system that needs to be regulated and changed, for the kid to really flourish.
Let's sort of wrap this up by coming back to the church. I know we're talking about reopening plans and all these different things, and the church has been quite broken during this pandemic. But as we're coming out of it, let's talk transitioning out of this. How do you see the church helping families heal, rebuild, foster some of this positive, you know, maybe, or to keep some of these positive things going and so on? How do you see the church involved here?
Well, my first comment has to do with the fact that as much as you and I talking here would like COVID to be done tomorrow, it's going to be a while yet.
Yeah.
And so my first thought would be the church needs to step up and create some creative activities, like, for instance, a Sunday school teacher or, you know, pastor of children and, you know, education pastor, whatever, to put out little 10-minute devotionals The kids already know who you are. The Sunday school teacher could just record themselves on a Zoom call and then just make it available. Here's 10 talks from Pastor Joe on this, and the families can watch Pastor Joe, and he's being a bit of a goof, and he's talking, but he's making some, you know, truth, and the family can talk about it, right?
Yeah.
Not per se Sunday school, because, you know, that's kind of, we got to be there for that. This is actually, they can watch anytime. And another thing could be, here's an idea you can do as a family. Pack this lunch. Here's the, you know, I'm making it up now, the scavenger hunt, the family scavenger hunt.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to find these things, or the family car rally. You got to take these pictures on your phone and send them in, and we're going to show the top 20 pictures from the families that signed up for the family car rally.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that we as a church are saying, you know, there's something more we can do together. We can lead the way by giving ideas like that. And so that's good. Coming out of COVID, I just think that we need to encourage people to retrust again, to reconnect again, to get the families over, to get the kids' friends over, to open your house. And you know, there may have been a higher level of caution than was needed for many people. Now, there are vulnerable populations. Yeah. I get it. But, you know, for the most part, we're not having a lot of people that catch COVID that are under 50 having many problems. There's the exception, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Usually there's complicating other health issues that COVID interacts with to make it complicated. And I say that right now with two people I'm praying for that are battling COVID right now, right? But one guy's 74. Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you there's a couple other things that he's facing, not just COVID, right? But I think just to the church to re-engage, to encourage people to get together again, and just trust the system of just, you know, believing that connection is important. Maybe my last comment, Sean, would be about a talk I just did recently to about 40 men about the importance of connection. And I did a study, Sean, about all the one another's in the New Testament, all the one another's. And I used to say, yeah, you know, all the one another's, there's likely 12 to 15 of them in the New Testament about, you know, forgive one another, love one another, care for one another, you know, pray for one another, in all the one another's, right?
Yeah.
I did a study just for myself. Sean, there are 29 one another's, not 12 to 15.
Yeah.
And when the Bible talks about the church being a community, that it's a body, the one another-ness is predominant all over the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what the top three are, Sean? The number one most common one is love one another. The second is encourage one another. And the third one is kiss one another. No, it means greet one another in your cultural way. Because in that day, they would kiss each other's cheek, and that was a greeting.
Yeah.
You would say bear hug one another.
Right. Yeah.
Now, bear hug one another is the opposite of COVID. But love, encourage, and bear hug are the three most common one another's in the New Testament, with another 26 you can add on. So, church, once COVID's behind us, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get back to being one another's.
Yeah, I love that. And we're going to end with that, Dave. I think that might be our motto coming out of COVID. Love, encourage, and bear hug one another. I think that's going to be it. So fantastic. Once again, brother, that was so good. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to the next time we can be together. Maybe we'll tackle the screen time thing. But thank you again.
Thanks a lot. God bless you.
God bless. Yeah. Hey, thanks for joining us again on Truth and Nails. Each of these episodes really flows out of conversations that I've had with pastors and lay leaders and family and friends. And so this is why your feedback is so important. Your likes, comments, and subscribes help me to gauge what kind of conversations engage you. And so I'm thankful when I do receive feedback. Each one of these episodes also is only possible because of a partnership with the Fellowship of Evangelical Bible Churches. So thankful for their input and for their help in this. If you want more information on the Fellowship of Evangelical Bible Churches, look up www.fellowshipforward.org. Until next time, thanks for being here. Keep fighting the good fight. Run well and keep the faith.